Okay, this is Jeff Wendell. I have my sidekicks, Jeannie and Jermaine, here with me. They are real people. They're here for all your support. This week we're gonna have a let's grill Jeannie. Dave is gonna be making up the call that he's supposed to have today, Tuesday with Dave, next week. So, Jeannie, what's going on?
Well, seeing that I just came in, Jim is loading up my car to put the perfect your pitch and the Elevate information in my car because tomorrow we start those events. So, what's going on in our world? Welcome all new students from Dallas Multifamily Boot Camp. Welcome aboard. The Perfect Your Power, Private Money Presentation Workshop is tomorrow and Thursday. And then on Friday and Saturday, we're doing Elevate. If anybody, I am? Oh, they say I'm not too loud. I will raise my volume. There we go. Oh, volume six. Wow. So, Perfect Your Private Money Workshops tomorrow, the fourth and fifth, and Elevate is the sixth and seventh, and it's being held in Plymouth, hometown. So, I live in Plymouth, so it's very convenient for me. It's 3 miles from my house. It's at the 1620, right across from the Plymouth Harbor and the Lobster Hut. Lots of good things happening there. This week's high five is going out to Cynthia Hurd from Fort Worth, Texas. It's her first deal. She bought a 16-unit apartment complex in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, 50 minutes outside of Tulsa. Purchase price $560. They asked $595. Beautiful stone building with carports for each unit. Tons of value plays. Rents are $100 to $200 below market value. It was self-managed, so they will be instituting a management company. And once the property is stabilized, they're looking at a 17 to 20% cash on cash return. Yahoo! Good going, Cynthia. Okay, operator, have we any questions?
Yes, we actually have one at the moment, and I want to remind everyone if you would like to ask a question to press star zero for questions. Our first question comes from Heather. Heather, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. It's
Hi,
Heather. Hi,
Heather.
Jeff. Hi, Jermaine.
Hello. Hey, Heather.
Hi. My sister and my brother-in-law and I came to visit you guys a month or so ago, and we
I
brought you some
remember.
fudge and some crazy coasters.
Yeah. Yeah, those are a blast.
We were just tickled by the idea of you guys having fun with those. So I hope it's working out. But
I brought a little pile home for my grandkids. They love separating them because they were all like bunched together, but they were nice, neat little squares. They were really nice. Thank you.
Good, I'm glad. That sounds great. So I'm glad everybody sounds like you're all doing good over there. I had a question about mapping a radius. Let's say you know a new stadium or something exciting in a given area is going up, and you wanted to kind of map a radius around that to look for properties. I didn't know if there might be a tool that people in the real estate industry use to help with something like this.
Well, I believe RE Indicator is what we would use. That's the Scott Stafford model. Jeff, what else do you know?
For mapping, so what I usually do is just like go to AAA, grab a map. If I find something that's going in that area, it's like I probably already have it marked up because I've called the Economic Development Committee to find out what new things are coming in there. And then as I go along, I talk to property managers, real estate brokers, just to confirm like on the neighborhood. And then I would like just just look for transportation, what's around there, and where are the jobs, what other jobs are in relationship to it. So it's basically transferring things over to a map that I have. I don't have a tool that would, like, draw all that stuff up for me.
Okay. Okay, guys, I do have the RE Indicator software. We bought that at UP9. And so, but I don't know about mapping a radius on it, so I don't know if there's any, if that is possible, and anybody can let me know, because Scott was kind enough to do the first intro with me, but he did say there'd be like some kind of a training kit coming that hasn't come yet.
Well, I would email him. It's Scott R. Stafford at yahoo.com. I would email him and just ask him, because that's his stick. He loves that stuff.
Okay, great.
Yeah,
I will.
There's nothing within that RE indicator to draw a radius.
You know what it was? It was Jackie from Texas. She did a call that's on my mentor is Don Goff, and it's on his favorite call list. And in that call, Jackie mentioned looking for properties within a 30-mile radius of something. And so that stuck with me. So I'm just trying to figure out a smart way to do that. But I'm gonna maybe Scott will know something. I'm gonna look around, and if I need to, I'll grab a paper map like you suggested, Jeff from AAA. But if anybody comes across anything and could let me know, that would be great.
Yeah.
Or anybody
yeah.
else out
Somebody
there.
Will chime in. Somebody will
yeah.
chime in. You watch.
Yeah. Should I give my email address in case somebody knows?
Sure. That'd be good.
Yeah.
Away. Okay. My email address is hlhrealestate@gmail.com.
Thank you,
Thanks,
Heather.
Everybody. Thank you so much. Take care, everybody.
Yep. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Any other questions, operator?
Yes, one more at the moment. Up next, we have Griffin. Griffin, please go ahead.
How you doing, guys? This is Griffin. I'm calling from Washington, D.C. And I had a question. The group that I work with, we basically shoot for an 8% return preferred to our investors at acquisition. We also try to pay ourselves a 4% asset management fee. And we're basically in these value-add deals where with a renovation budget, sometimes it's hard to hit the 8% preferred and get the 4% asset management fee the first year. So I've kind of been trying to get creative and doing second loans to cover the renovation budget, maybe hitting at like the 12th month in order to pay our investors the first year. I was wondering if you have any other creative ideas that I might be able to work into my underwriting that would pay our investors and get us a 4% return with a renovation budget.
What we usually do is we factor the renovations as part of our raise. So if you know it's going to take $500,000-$600,000 to get the units up to code and up to rent market value, then we raise that money with the investors so that we're still able to reach our cash-on-cash return to the investors right out of the gate, unless it's an extreme rehab, and then you can disclose to the investors for the first 6 months you're not going to get any cash flow, but after that, we're going to play catch-up. Instead of 8%, you'll start off at 9 or 10, however you can do it.
Okay, very good. Yeah, these are kind of larger, 300, 400 unit things, so I think they are kind of more of an extreme renovation budget. But another quick question that comes to this is what do you think is a good rule of thumb to use for closing cost? I've seen everywhere from like 1 to 4% on different things. Kind of trying to get an idea there what I should use.
It's 3% for closing costs and 1% for loan points.
Okay, very good. I'll write this down. 1% for loan points. Yeah. Wonderful. And also, one other thing that kind of goes back to the renovation thing. What would investors kind of think if you were to only maybe do half of the renovation year one and then maybe down the road completing the renovation? Is that like a big no-no to a savvy investor, or is that kind of common?
Well, they really care about their cash. They don't really care about the renovation. They care about what they're getting. So it depends on how you sell it, you know, and who buys into it. I mean,
okay.
We've had properties where we pay no cash flow, but at the end of 6 months, they're going to get a 62% return on their money. And then we're going to sell the property. So it just depends on what you sell to your investors.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
It's better around getting all that renovation money up front because, like, you can try to get it down the road. It's tougher to get. So you're better off getting it right up, right from the start if you're looking at it for, like, Jeannie. Yeah.
The other thing is, what if the bank tells you they need X amount of dollars in CapEx money and you've only set aside a portion of it? Where are you going to get the money to do the work? If you don't raise it from the investors right from the get-go, you may not get it. And you have a year to complete those repairs in order to get the CapEx return. So you do your repairs in quarterly. You submit the receipt. Somebody comes out, looks at the property, signs off on it, and then they issue you a check. But if you don't have the money to get the work done, you're not going to get that CapEx money. And you're going to be really scrambling.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. I think he's in a restaurant or something, like banging dishes.
Yeah.
We have no further questions at the moment.
Okay, I have a couple. What are the top five emerging markets at the moment? So Jermaine just gave me a list, and I believe this is from May, and I have this list, and I've sent it to a lot of you. Columbia, South Carolina, Dayton, Ohio, Las Vegas, Nevada, Jackson, Mississippi, Wilmington, Delaware, Jacksonville, Florida, Greenville, South Carolina, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Boise, Idaho, St. Louis, Missouri, Cleveland, Ohio, Cape Coral, Florida, and Lexington, Kentucky. The next question she asked, and this is Glider Torres. I just joined the mentorship coaching program and wanted to know what are the most important things I should be doing my first month in the program, knowing my goal is to buy a 100-unit property within my first 6 months. Number one, pick a market. That is first and foremost. I mean, you've got to pick a market and you've got to start working with brokers to get pocket listings. So you've got to build rapport with them. I mean, they're going to send you crap in the beginning. But if you keep working with them and show them the underwriting that you're doing and tell them that your investors are used to seeing a 12% cash-on-cash return and you can't reach it this way. But most important, pick a market. Don't go all over the state of Massachusetts because you'll make yourself crazy. So pick one or two markets and just jump in. Jeff, you want to add anything?
Yeah, make at least two private money contacts a week. That's important. Start building up your private money list. Three, do the emergent training, prep work number one that I sent out about 2 hours ago. And Jermaine, do you want to add anything?
And you really should be contacting brokers. Once you pick your market, you really should be contacting brokers constantly. You should be, and the one advice that I heard was really good advice is when you call them, one of the things you don't want to do is make it about you. You have to make it about them. So find something that you can talk to them about. I mean, yeah, of course you want properties, but the idea is to find commonality, find something that, you know, you guys can talk about and make it about them. Don't make it about you, because if you make it about you, they're probably going to take their time getting back to you. But if you make it about them and you they realize that it's more of a friendship than a business relationship, more than likely they're going to steer what they can towards you. So.
Okay, operator.
Once we gather in names.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Jeannie, do you want to go with the preferred rate of return? Because there's some people
yep.
in Kansas City that were supposed to call in and ask you about that this weekend.
Okay. So a preferred rate of return is if you have a property that isn't quite meeting the 12% cash-on-cash return, you're committing to your investors that you'd give them an 8% preferred rate of return before you get a penny. So preferred rate means if 10% comes in the door, they get the first 8 and you get 2. When you even off, then you do 50-50 across the board. But what will happen is if it comes in at 11, you're going to get 3, they're going to get 8. But once you get close to the 8 mark, then for every percentage point, you're going to get 90% and they're going to get 10% until you even off and become equal. And then it's a 50-50 split. So I'm going to answer this. What is the difference between a repositioning and a micro repositioning? I've heard Dave use the term in the past, and I'm just trying to understand the nuance. So a micro repositioning, I believe, is when you delve way in to the tune of roofs and pipes and, you know, heater system, chillers, all of that stuff. A regular repositioning is when you just upgrade, put some lipstick on the units, maybe put granite countertops and laminate flooring in. If I'm mistaken, please jump in, Jeff, but I'm pretty sure that's what it means, right?
Yeah, and the big thing is occupancy, okay? So when you have a micro repositioning, you're typically like maybe like 65 to 70% occupied. Then like with a big repositioning, it's like 50% or more. So like with the micro repositioning, you are doing like you're looking at about $3,500 per unit on average for like your rehab costs. And then when you get into a bigger repositioning, it could be like major stuff. So it could take a while to get it up. It's basically the speed of like recovery too. So with a micro repositioning, it's a lot faster. You might be able to get stable within 6 to 14 months. And a big repositioning, it could take you like 2 years, 3 years to get it totally repositioned. So that's the difference.
Okay. Operator, do you have any questions?
Yes, we have one more question. Nune, please go ahead.
Hello, everybody. So my question is, what's the best way to find the brokers? Is it just going on LoopNet and seeing who has listings like that type of listings and connecting with them?
That's one way of doing it. Sure.
Uh-huh.
You can scout out local real estate offices within your market, wherever you're going to look, and you can see the Marcus and Miller Chaps, the CB Richard Ellis, the ARAs, and I like to look at faces because usually a face tells me a lot. So if I can see pictures of the brokers, then those are the ones I want to reach out to.
And did you mention the website?
Marcus and Miller Chap is one. ARA, which is American Realty Advisors.
Uh-huh.
CBRE, which is CB Richard Ellis. Those are the three main ones. There are a lot more brokers out there, but those are the main companies that I usually see listed.
Those are for commercial real estate brokers who do this type of listings?
Yes.
Because some people don't do they just do residential, right?
Yeah, well, you can get those names off of MLS, but
right.
We're wanting to work with commercial properties.
Uh huh. Okay. Great. Thank you.
Let me add something to that before you hang up.
Yeah.
Okay. So you want to go up to the competencies about real estate brokers. Okay. So when you go up to LoopNet, you're going to find out who has deals in the market. Okay. And Coach
right.
Craig Picard pretty much lays out how you should really talk to these brokers on your first call into them.
Okay.
So review that call. It's really it's a key call to listen to. And that will give you – then you'll be a little bit more comfortable with it. When you're looking – are you going to be looking in the Dallas market or is there another market you're going to be looking at?
We haven't figured out our market yet.
Okay.
Where do you live? Boston, in Belmont area.
Well, you could go to unitedmultifamily.com, umf.com, and look at some properties up there. They have some brokers. Some
uh-huh.
of them are a little arrogant, but they do have some brokers up there. But, Boston is not landlord-friendly, so remember that.
No.
And it's expensive, too.
Yes.
That's right. I thought you were from Dallas, right? But you're from Boston because you're coming to my immersion training.
Yes.
So you want to practice, though. Like, practice in an area that's like nothing's happening.
Okay.
So you get a little bit comfortable and use Dave's script, right? Because that broker script keeps you in control of the conversation.
Uh-huh.
We've had students just starting out like the broker thinks they're experienced because you're asking key information, you're in control of the conversation. So practice
right.
that a couple of times. Have someone listen to what you're saying when you do talk to brokers or record yourself just in case. Like if they start asking you for the proof of funds right away, that means you're
uh-huh.
triggering something. You're
uh-huh.
something you're saying. It's not like you're triggering them to ask you that question. So
yeah.
you just act as if, go by that script, and then when you think you got it nailed down, then call brokers in your the market that you're interested in investing in.
Okay. So you said, where was that conversation, Craig's conversation with?
Jermaine's looking it up right now.
You have the website open, Jermaine?
I do.
Oh, yeah, he'll have it in a second.
I think it's real estate broker call number one. Or number two, one of those.
Okay.
So if you go to the website.
Uh-huh.
And it is in competency number 9.
Okay.
And on there are calls on there, building broker relationships.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And those calls up there have a description of the call, so you'll like just look at open up the file, which is like teach call descriptions, and you'll see exactly which one I was talking about. How you go up to LoopNet and stuff, and it's by Coach Craig DeCobb. Okay, next.
Okay, we have no fruit. Oh, actually, somebody just pressed *0. Let me get that name.
All right. We want to hear some people from Dallas calling in and some people from Kansas City because I was out there last weekend and we had some great barbecue. So, Jeannie, what were some of like the good stuff that that got covered at Manager the Manager? Like, was there any key questions that some people needed clarification on that you can think of?
Oh, we had so many questions. It was amazing. I think everybody that was there learned something that they didn't know before. Laurie Marie was great. She covered a lot of things. We kind of did tit for tat a little bit on a couple of things, the way she does it compared to the way we do it. But I think people really get a lot out of it. I got a lot of kudos sent to me by email. People are asking us to do it twice a year instead of once a year. And
So one of the biggest things about we're talking about the asset management class, right? But when you start analyzing deals, the rent roll, the T12s, the things that you're looking at to buy the deal are also the reports you're going to be looking at when you run the deal. So if you can analyze the deal good, you're going to be able, you'll get those reports, and you'll get a few other reports. You'll get the Monday morning report, but you also get like the variance report and things like that. But just knowing those T12s and rent rolls will get you will be the same thing that you're looking at. So you'll be able to see how your property's operating.
Yeah, there was a couple of people in the room that have properties, and their property management company is not sharing reports with them. So they were like bowled over when I sent them the Monday morning report and an actual monthly report that we send out to our investors, and they're not even getting them as owners. So they were really alarmed, and they left the event and went right, made an appointment to go see the property management company to see if they could get the same types of reports that I sent them, just to show them what they look like. So,
you need those, right? So if when you're going through that the agreement with your property management company, make sure you include that in there, because they'll try to give you like monthly or quarterly reports on how your property's doing. You want it every Monday, a report, and have it in there that you get those reports. All right, who's next?
Okay, up next we have Mike. Mike, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Mike Urquhart from Great Falls, Virginia. And I want to also say that the property management course was fantastic. I really learned a lot, and even learned about some of the mistakes I've made in the past. So it was really very helpful. But my question today is, I've run into several properties now that are owner managed, and the financials seem to be a mess. I mean, I had one where the owner listed $183,000 in expenses. The pro forma done up by the broker had $488,000 in expenses.
Wow.
But it's all based on sort of, you know, rule of thumb guesswork. And is there any, besides, I mean, I know to ask for the bank records, but is there other things I should be asking for to try and break through this, you know, lack of data?
Well, if you don't have a trailing 12, which it doesn't sound like you do, then
no,
you would have,
he's got no data in it, yeah.
You have to get at least one solid month in so that you can amortize it over the year, because, I mean, how are you going to get accurate numbers if you don't even have 1 month that's accurate? So what I would do is put in a letter of intent, but base it on next month so that you can get 1 month of actual itemizations. Because short of going to the property and walking every unit, which is costly, and you're going to be paying somebody, I mean, you don't even know what you can offer on the property.
Right.
And he probably doesn't even know what it's worth.
No, he apparently has an inflated idea, though.
Well, of course. He's owned it and self-managed it. He's emotionally attached.
Right.
How many units is it?
Hold on a second. It's 200, I think.
200?
Uh-huh. I'm sorry.
He doesn't have any rent rolls?
No, I've asked for that. I mean, they have something in the offering memorandum, you know, I just don't know how accurate it is. And I based some of my estimate of his actual, you know, income stream off the rent rolls they included. But the data, there's so much data missing, it's just hard to get a, you know, a feel for what's actually going on.
Is the property in your local market so you can drive by it?
Yeah, it's in Winchester, Virginia, so it's not that far away.
Okay, so do you have any experience with like repairs and stuff?
Not a lot, no.
If you have, I would. You might want to. Do you have a power team in that area yet? Do you have a property management company that you've been dealing with?
No. No. Nope.
Okay. All right. So what you're gonna have to do is, basically, right? He's gonna have to he's gonna have to give you some kind of rent roll, right? But then he's gonna have to set up an account where he's like starts depositing the rents that come in, because he's gonna, and the way you tell the broker, right? Like, we need a history, right? Because the lender's gonna need a history of what's going on, so we're gonna have to recreate these financials, and then so you need to look at what's going on in that market, what the market occupancy is there, and then but for your operating expenses, just like call up the tax assessors and find out what how they assess taxes, if it's going to be assessed on the purchase, or if it's going to be assessed in like 5 years or 6 years, to find out what year you're in, and then get what the mill rate is, and like have they given you any price guidance on like what to offer on the property?
What they have an offering price, yes.
All right, so you got the price right, so you figure out your taxes, call up an insurance broker in the area, find out what insurance is going for that age property and in the market. So what's the typically average? Is it like 162 a door? Is it 250 a door? Find out what the insurance is, because you have 9 operating expenses. Okay. So then
have a website? If they have a website, you can see what the going rents are. And just do the legwork yourself and figure out how many units at what price, and that's your income. And then minus out any vacancies, use the rule of thumb of 10% unless you know it's less. And then I wouldn't have an income.
Yeah, the income I think I've got a handle on. It's the expenses that basically. Their T-12 shows, you know, expenses as 13% of income.
Well, typically we use a rule of thumb of 50% unless it's in taxes.
I know. Oh. And when you look at it, there's no expenses for, you know, landscaping, marketing, you know, payroll is, you know, doesn't even pay for one employee. And so, you know, that's we're trying to figure out all of that. They just, in the pro forma, they just basically, it's like your rule of thumb, you know, so much per door, and they just throw it in there.
Yeah.
So.
Well, if you
want
to call me, I know people in that area that might be able to help you.
Okay.
Just call me offline and I'll.
Okay. If I decide to follow up on it, I spoke to the broker, and he said he's already got a couple of offers in that are close to the asking price, and I'm not sure that's going to be realistic at all. So, but I wanted to just, you know, see if you had any suggestions. And so, thanks for the help.
Yeah, those offers are probably from a hedge fund, because they're getting close to the end of the year, and they got to spend their money, so they don't really care what the cash in cash is. They're just going to spend the money.
Yeah. Oh, well. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Up next, we have John. John, please go ahead.
Hi. I'm one of the guys who was in the boot camp in the Dallas area this weekend past. And this is my first call, so it's great to be here. I do have a question. Thank you very much. I'm working through the 7 days of homework assignments that we were given by Steve. One of the things for today was to go to LoopNet and practice underwriting. One of the things that I've noticed on LoopNet is that there's not a lot of data compared with what we were using for examples this weekend. So the most information I have on a couple of things that I've looked at in generally in this area tells the effective gross income, the operating expenses as a total, and the net operating income. And it doesn't go into any detail below that. Is there something I should ask a broker for to get a little more information, or are there actual listings that I can work with that have more detail than that?
Some of them up there on LoopNet do, maybe not in the area that you're choosing, but
okay.
If you want to,
I'm only a free member of LoopNet right now, too. So I don't know if that makes a difference.
Well, if you'd like to send me an email, I'll send you a property from beginning to end that you can analyze and practice
okay.
on.
Okay.
It will have actual rent rolls, year-to-date operating expenses, and P&L for the last 2 years, plus a property package. I'll send you all that.
Fantastic.
So
okay.
My email is jeannie@rementor.com.
Jeannie, could you spell your name?
Jeannie @rementor.com.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll send that to you.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
All right, thanks.
Okay, up next we have Heather. Heather, please go ahead.
Hi again. It's Heather.
what'd you do? Skip school today?
No. Today's my real estate day. Come on, I'm working my job. But you're right. I do go I'm a teacher, so Jeff knows I have to go into school on other days. But so I am asked. What I wanted to ask you all is. If we wanted to start a direct mail campaign in a certain area, let's say like a northern part of a city, for example, how do we find the addresses of multifamily properties within a certain area of a city?
You could buy a list. You can buy a list with of prominent zip codes.
Buy a list with prominent zip codes?
Yeah, you know, zip codes in that area. So you want everybody from 02370 to 02385. Just say
okay,
that.
Great. And then how do I get that list? Where do I go for that?
Well, there's several that you can go. There's ListOps, there's Claritas, which I think was bought out by Reese, wasn't it? Or Nielsen, one of the two. You remember, Jeff?
I don't know.
Nielsen, right?
I use Melissa Data for my mail.
Yeah, Melissa Data is good too.
Did you say Melissa Data?
Yep.
Yep.
And these are all .coms?
I can give you the phone number for Melissa Data when I pull out my little gold book. I'll find it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Not to be confused with a little red book, right, Jeannie?
Yeah, the little red book, you don't want that. That's my household bills. The little gold book has all the information that you need. Oh, shame on I. All right, so, yeah, that's true. I never lie, by the way. I wish I did. Wouldn't get me into so much trouble. Find my Melissa Data. Jeff, you probably have it right off the top of your head.
I was just waiting for you to get it. It's 1-888.
1-888?
1-888.
Oh, 1-888, sorry.
No, it's 800-800-6245.
He was guessing. 800-800-6245.
Yep.
Okay. And so that's the one that's your favorite, Jeff?
Yeah.
The Melissa Data?
Yeah,
we recommend them a lot.
And they just give Melissa Melissa's zip codes, or whomever I talk to, I just give them some zip codes, and they'll send me lists of multifamily property owners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And the other one was Claritas, and they were bought out by Nielsen Market Data. And their number is 800-866-6511.
800-866-6511. Got it. Well, thank you all again so much.
You're welcome.
Have a great day.
Can you tell Jeff and I like brother and sister?
I can tell. I can tell, and I love it. Now you two behave.
Okay.
Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye now.
Okay.
Just
we
to
have
let
no
everyone else know. Just to let everyone else know, if you want to, on if you go to competency 10, there's actually a whole competency in regards to direct mail and how to find direct mail, and Dave has calls on there for direct mail. So, if you wanna know how to do that, just go to competency 10 on the training website.
Thank you. That was very good.
Operator, were you talking?
Yes, we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay, I have one from Fred Harris. What is the best advice you can give someone who filed for bankruptcy less than 5 years ago and is still looking to do this business? Get a partner. Get a partner that can qualify for the mortgage and put up any liquidity necessary to get the due diligence started. So that should be, other than picking a market, and you live in Dallas, so that's where you should buy, is in the outskirts of Dallas, not in Dallas, but on the surrounding properties like Tyler, Longview, San Marcos, Texarkana, those kinds of areas, Fort Worth, and then find a partner who's got liquidity up to 6 months of mortgage payments and can qualify for the mortgage. That is his role. Your role is the work. And now, next question is from John G. What is the average commission to pay a broker? Who is responsible to pay that commission? If you're going with a listing broker's property, he is paid by the seller. If you've made a contract with a buyer's broker and anything he shows you, you've got to pay, then you're responsible for that commission at the closing table. I don't think in this day and age you need to pay a buyer's broker, but some people want to. They have a relationship with buyer's brokers, but I would go with the listing broker, and that's they get paid by the seller. Kathy Stafford from Denver, Colorado. How many investors do you need to be in a deal to get an acquisition fee? You need to syndicate the deal, which is more than three. So if you've got a $2 million property, you're going to raise $500,000 to get the property off the market and into the due diligence, then you're syndicating that deal. You're probably going to get five investors in that deal, and you get an acquisition fee for putting the deal together. Any questions yet, operator?
Yes, we actually have Joanne. Joanne, please go ahead.
Hi, it's Joanne Urquhart. My husband, Mike, asked a question earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so I have two questions. One is, we found a senior living in Indianapolis, and it's not assisted living, but it does have a center at the bottom that's rented out for daycare, adult daycare. And what when we looked at it, we were it looks like a great property, but our concern is, you know, the value added since it is seniors and they have fixed income. Is that an issue?
No.
I mean, I don't know if these seniors do, but.
Is that daycare center exclusive to that
no.
senior facility so other people can come in?
No, it's actually.
How?
Yeah, it's actually most of the people who use it are not even in the facility. They're not there. They just come from, because they have all these programs. They're brought there. There's actually a shuttle bus that brings them to the program.
And is it part of the property, so you would own it and gain the revenues that way?
Well, we would rent it to them.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you can market it well, you could
mm-hmm.
institute a lot of different things. You could have a bingo night and at night when nobody's around and utilize it that way, unless they get all the revenues from that facility.
Yeah, well, that's a great idea, because they don't have a contract yet. They want a contract, but that we could just put it in the contract that at night we can use it for other facilities.
Other things, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great idea. The other issue I wanted to ask you, the property he talked about was in Winchester, Virginia. And there are two people that are in the mastery program who were interested in it, but, you know, because we can't get the good data. What about if we just put it in using 50%? Because that's market standard.
As long as you have a back-out clause, I see no problem.
Okay. Because it turns out this guy is 85 years old. He's been managing this property for 40 years himself, and it's in really good shape. It's a really nice property. It's just the expenses are real because he's done it himself for 85 years, and they finally convinced him he needs to retire. So yeah, I'm going to do that. That sounds great. Thank you. You always have great ideas.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Okay, up next we have Susan. Susan, please go ahead.
Hey guys, it's Susan, your favorite gal in Denver. Jeannie, good, Jeannie, I just left you a message and then I realized I was missing the call, so I jumped on. first of all, thank you guys for all your help. We actually just closed a 5-unit today with a... Yeah, there's a couple hundred in equity already at purchase, and it's cash flowing.
The one in California?
Yes, and it's cash flowing.
Good for you.
Yes, it is.
Good for you.
Yeah, thank you. And the cool thing is the seller is, you know, obviously it's not 50 or 100 or 200 units, but the seller has another 4 units that he wants. He's giving us first right refusal. So, you know, we're trying to build up that portfolio, and hopefully in about a year, maybe parlay those into something bigger. But I have a question, because we're also developing some other things that we have been doing for a few years. You guys had mentioned, I can't remember if this was Steve in Multifamily Millions, but you guys mentioned money brokers and those guys. And granted, they take a significant, they take, you know, 5 to 10 points on the money raise. But I was wondering if there was a resource that you had that I could reach out to, either a website or a money broker you knew, because I do have another San Diego development, which is a really solid, safe deal, and it's got significant returns. And I'm looking for the last, you know, million or so on it, and I'm just, you know, having a hard time with that raise.
I thought your husband went to the Wilson conferences.
Yeah, he's right here. He did. but that was family office money versus, I thought money brokers were...
Hard money lenders?
A little different. No, not necessarily hard money lenders, but money brokers, guys that have, you know, that manage PPMs or syndicates that are pretty much looking for capital.
A financial planner, you mean? Like a financial planner?
No, how do I explain it? I thought there was just people who have access to investors with capital that actually they have to have, like, a license to become a money broker in some market.
Yeah, a financial planner. They have to have a license to use that security.
Well, and I talked to some financial planners as well. I thought money, maybe it is called that, but I thought it was essentially someone who has another sort of industry and someone who is connected to capital and pretty much invests their capital into these types of real estate deals. And then, of course, gets paid a percentage of that raise.
No, you got me.
Okay.
I do it the old-fashioned way. Some people do crowdfunding, but I don't do that.
Yeah.
I do the old-fashioned way.
I just thought there was something that you and Steve had mentioned, that multi-millions, and I remember them saying that, you know, a lot of times these guys will take 5 to 10%. It's, you know, how hard money will take, you know, a couple points or several points on the funds. It's similar to this, but I think they're already structured PPMs that they just invest into the deals.
Well,
I have talked to
people that do that. I know people that do that for earnest money deposits, but I don't know people that do it for down payments on properties.
Not even down payments, but full raises. Okay.
No.
Do you have any resources of those, of at least then the financial planners that partner up in real estate investments?
No, nope, that's something you got to get on your own, just like I did.
Thank you, Jeannie. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay, we're getting to the close to the hour mark, so I have a question, and it's from Fernando Romero from Seattle, Washington. Can you please explain the difference between a recourse loan and a non-recourse loan? I seem to be stuck on what is the difference. Well, a non-recourse loan means that they go after the LLC of the property before they touch you, but non-recourse means they can't go after even the LLC because the loan is prohibiting it from going after you in case of a disaster. But there could be some little mumbo-jumbo inside of the contract that says if you fail to complete a mortgage payment, then 20% of the loan becomes recourse. So a recourse loan means you're fully responsible for a disaster should happen. They can go right after you and your personal residence and all of that. We don't recommend that. Always stay above $1 million in loan. And you should be able to get a non-recourse loan. Under $1 million is a recourse loan, typically. But these are questions to ask Eric Stewart. He's a genius when it comes to these things. And his phone number is 321-615-8919. He's awesome, and he can explain this much more eloquently than I can. Any other questions, operator?
Yes, Jeannie, we have Susan. She had another question. Susan, please go ahead.
Yep.
Jeannie, you know I can't just talk to you once without calling you right back, you know? Juan and I are also kind of just signed some NDAs on some senior living locally in Colorado and of course, the San Diego development we have and some other things. I was wondering if it's okay if I left my name and phone number in case anyone was interested in jumping in on one of these investment opportunities.
Sure.
Excellent. Okay, so my name is Susan Aliyah, E-L-I-Y-A, in Denver. Well, my husband and I, Juan Crespin, have been investing for several years and obviously moving further into the large units. Email is Susan at Revest, R-E-V-E-S-T, capital.com, if anyone's interested in jumping in on some of the deals that we have. Thank you so much, Jeannie.
You're welcome.
I'm sure I'll talk to you soon.
Yep. Any other questions, operator?
No, we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay. Here's a question about 1031 exchanges. What is the purpose of doing a 1031 exchange, and what tax breaks can you get from doing a 1031 exchange? William Blair from Columbus, Ohio. Well, a 1031 exchange is when you sell a property, you have 180 days to assign and close on a new property tax deferred. So you take all those profits and you roll it into another property. You don't pay any taxes on it. And you can keep playing that game until you're ready to pay taxes on it. So you get all tax breaks. You can even pick two properties, identify a property. As long as you're within your time frame, then you can use the tax breaks. Jermaine's in here. Oh, I get one from Kathy Fosher from Portland, Maine. We have been reading the Sponsorship Home Study course. In the training manual, it has the following with regards to what sponsors are looking for with regard to compensation. I am confused as to what the definition of carve-out. Above, they refer to the carve-out and percent of equity as separate items. So a carve-out is the percent of the deal that you're taking. So the investors get the lion's share, and it's based on the cash-on-cash return. So if it's a 12% cash-on-cash return, you should be able to take 30% for your carve-out and 70% to the investors. If you're anywhere above the 12% cash-on-cash return, you could even take 35%, and you and your sponsor will typically split that, as well as split the cash flow coming into the property for your side and split your acquisition fee. Hopefully that clarifies it. They're divided usually between you and them, unless you can co-sponsor the deal, and maybe you can only give the sponsor a third of it, depending on if you have the liquidity and half of the net worth, and they just are coming in for the other half of the net worth. So it's all negotiable. If you're looking at an 8 cap and 12% cash on cash return, what would be the expected breakdown be for sponsor, manager, deal finder, and investors? Investors get the 8% preferred rate of return, and the other 4 is between you and your sponsor. Managers are the sponsor and you are managing members. Unless you have any blips on your credit, then the sponsor signs on the deal himself, and he's the manager, and he signs all documents throughout the life of the deal. It's not like they come into the property, they sponsor the property, and then once it closes, they go off on their merry way. No, they're in the deal until you decide to sell it. Hope that helps. Any other questions, operator, before we say bye-bye for today?
Yes, we actually have two more. Up next, we have
okay.
Reggie. Reggie, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie.
Hi.
Hi, Jeannie. This is Reggie again.
Hi.
I have a quick question. You gave Eric Stewart's number. I didn't quite get it. Could you repeat it?
321-615-8919.
8919. 3216. Okay, got it. Okay.
Okay.
That's all I need. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, up next we have Mark. Mark, please go ahead.
Hey, Jeannie, it's Mark.
Surprise,
hey, Jeannie, it's Mark from...
from Ottawa, I know.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. We're still trying to put this 40-unit deal together here, and I'm not hearing back from Eric. He thought he had a sponsor for me and everything for this, but I'm not getting anything from him, so I'm kind of hoping that I can call you and get somebody that's willing to sponsor this for us.
Okay. What was the purchase price?
Sorry?
What was the purchase price? I know where
it is. It's $994.
So it's under $1 million.
It is under $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Eric,
okay.
What we did is there was a credit back for one of the boilers that had to be changed, but there's also $170,000 worth of renovations. And the way we kind of presented it and the way we were working with Eric is we had put that all in to the deal. And mm-hmm. so it was the one, it was like 1,156,000 was the total. And that's how Eric was kind of trying to put it together. So we only had to come up with 20% of that whole entire amount.
Yep.
It's just, I don't want to kind of, we're getting late into the, long into the tooth in this, and I'm trying to make sure it doesn't slip through our fingers.
Okay. I'll call you offline.
Okay. Thanks, Jeannie.
Okay. You're welcome.
Bye.
Okay. We have no further questions at the moment, Jeannie.
Okay, that's going to be it for today. Whoever is coming to perfect your private money presentation and Elevate, I will be at that event and see you all there. And in the meantime, thank you, Jeff, for your input. Thank you, Jermaine, for the questions. And c'est la vie, everybody. Have a great day. Bye-bye.